It's your Thursday daily delivery. Happy NFL Draft Day to everybody who celebrates. I am Michael Rand. Glad to have you guys back for another day. And not a normal show today, obviously, because we got the draft coming up tonight. NFL Draft starts tonight. I'm going to talk about that here in just a little bit, and then we're going to talk even more about that with Chip Scoggins, Star Tribune columnist. He and I will get into kind of our final thoughts on what the Vikings might do. We'll certainly get into a lot of Timberwolves talk as well. Wolves up 2-0 in that first round series against Phoenix, heading into Game 3 Friday. Phoenix favored in that game, by the way, so don't take anything for granted, even after watching the Wolves play well in those first two games. Chip and I will get into a little Gopher football recruiting as well at the end of our discussion. Got some better Wolves news even than just playoff advancement. Naz Reid winning sixth man of the year on Wednesday. I'll talk about that towards the end of the show. And the Twins win their third straight. Thank goodness for the White Sox. Trying to figure out if this tells us more about the Twins or the White Sox. Maybe at the end of the day, it doesn't matter that much. What matters is that they got a few wins. They can feel a little bit better about themselves, and the standings don't look quite so putrid as they did just a few days ago. First, though, what I missed, like I said at the jump, I'm going to talk about the draft a little bit in big picture terms, because just thinking about this, I woke up thinking about the draft. I was thinking about it yesterday. I woke up thinking about what this means tonight to the Vikings, and I've arrived at a conclusion that might be a little bit of a hot take, but I think it makes sense when you parse the big picture of everything. I think this, at least going into the draft, could be the most important draft pick in Vikings history. Now, that's not saying this is going to turn out to be the best player in Vikings history. I'm talking about before the draft, and I'm not talking about, hey, They picked Randy Moss, right? That was such a big franchise-altering move. They picked Adrian Peterson. They've drafted Fran Tarkenton. They've had all sorts of draft picks in their past. The defensive Hall of Famers, Alan Page, Carl Eller. Yes, those guys turned out to be amazing, wonderful Hall of Fame caliber players. What I'm talking about is the importance of this moment going into the draft. They very well could take a quarterback in the top 10, maybe even the top 5, but they have never taken a quarterback in the top 10 of the NFL draft in their entire 60-plus years of franchise history. So if you're talking about the most important position in football, quite possibly the most important position in all of organized big-time team sports, and you're saying you are going to invest the highest pick you have ever invested in that draft, That to me says this is their most important draft pick going in. This pick will set the course for the future of the franchise for the next half decade at least. And if you don't believe that, let's think about the last 25 years of Vikings history. Going back to 1999, one of the last times they picked a quarterback in the first round, took Dante Culpepper in the first round of the 1999 draft. I was much younger back then. I was like just starting out, like early 20s, just starting out in my Star Tribune career. Didn't really understand how like this progression of things really worked. Wasn't really thinking like big picture. I was like, why'd they take him? They just had Randall Cunningham coming off this great year. They had signed, you know, they had Jeff George as the veteran backup possibility in case things didn't go well with Cunningham in year two, which they didn't. And they ended up meeting George in 1999, by the way. But obviously they were charting the succession plan. 2000, Dante comes in, plays great as a second year quarterback, first year starter. They go to the NFC title game again. Things kind of fizzle out, though, right? Like, it's not sustainable. 2001, Danny Green gets fired because the things aren't sustainable. 2002 to 2005, they have some success. Mostly the defense is the problem, not the offense. But Dante shreds his knee in 2005. Mike Tice loses his job. Not just because of that, obviously. There's plenty of stuff going on in 2005 that would have warranted that. But not having that QB stability means they have to start over, right? 2006, 2007, they draft Tavares Jackson. He comes in as the starter. Brad Childress is there. That's not sustainable. They have to get Brett Favre. That, you know, last legs of that, 2010, Brad Childress gets fired. They're starting over again. 2011, they draft Christian Ponder, number 12 overall. You guys, spoiler alert, that didn't work out. Ends up costing Leslie Frazier his job, or at least part of the reason Leslie Frazier is fired after the 2013 season, even though I'm sure Leslie Frazier had very little to do with the drafting of Christian Ponder. So there you go. 2014, Mike Zimmer, the new regime comes in. They draft another quarterback in the first round, Teddy Bridgewater, last pick of that draft in the first round, 32nd overall. Has a good year in 2014, you know, shows some promise as a rookie. 2015, leads them to the playoffs. Going into 2016, of course, has the catastrophic injury. They go into veteran mode, Sam Bradford, then Kirk Cousins, Case Keenum thrown into that mix. That doesn't prove to be sustainable in the long term. Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman eventually get fired after the 2021 season. They still have Cousins when Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell get here, but it's kind of the writing on the wall. He's going to be here for a medium term, but not forever. And now here we are, ready for them to make the biggest pick they've made so far, and quite possibly, like I said, the biggest pick in Vikings history. Again, if we're talking about the investment, all the picks they're going to have to give up for this, all of that is riding on this one pick, this one quarterback. This will define their tenure. This will define the next 5 years of Vikings history. So, as I said, I think this is the most important draft pick in Vikings history, at least going into a draft. You might agree or disagree, but that is what is at stake tonight, and I can't wait to see what happens.
Open a 5.15% annual percentage yield 9-month certificate from Royal Credit Union. Open now at rcu.org/certificate515. Early withdrawal penalties could reduce earnings and principal. APY accurate as of 4/26/24. Insured by NCUA.
Got a lot of stuff I want to talk to Star Tribune columnist Chip Scoggins about. He joins me right now. Chip, how you doing?
Busy week.
Oh,
busy
man.
Week in town.
Is it not, though? Man, it's crazy. Like, Wolves, Vikings draft. I mean, Twins have actually won a couple games here. We got Gopher football signing a bunch of guys, or bringing a bunch of guys in the portal. In addition to everything else, I want to start Wolves, though, because, man,
yeah.
I am somewhere between surprised and shocked at how these first two games went, given the 0-3 regular season against Phoenix and the narrative going in. Where are you sitting with this 2-0 lead right now?
Well, I don't know if I would say shocked, because we've seen this team be a really good team all year. They played poorly in the three games against the Suns during the regular seasons. And, you know, going in, you're wondering, okay, is it a matchup issue because of the Suns can go small, and how are you going to defend them, and what are they doing against Ant that was limiting him, his production? But we've said all year a couple things about the Wolves, that they're a more mature team than we've seen in the past.
For sure.
Now, they had to prove it, but I think that we've seen that they're a more professional, mature team, and that they're the best defensive team in the NBA.
Yeah.
And if they could figure that out, and you gave Chris Finch a week and his staff a week to kind of, you know, okay, decompress. As he said, I asked him about having, you know, essentially 6 days. He said, you just take it apart and figure out what works, what doesn't, and put it back together. He said it reminded him of kind of like a football game. But we're seeing why they are the best defensive team in the NBA. I mean, what they've done to the Suns in the second halves, or all, you know, both games, but in the second halves, particularly to pull away from them. And the thing that's impressive about the Wolves, the Suns can beat you one way, right?
Yeah.
The Wolves have several ways that they can win, and we've seen it. They can win with defense. They can win with depth. They can win with Anthony Edwards going crazy. They can win with their back, or with their role players, you know, having big games. So it's been awfully impressive, those two games. And Phoenix just looked rattled at the end of game two, like they don't know, you know, how to solve what the Wolves are doing to them.
Well, yeah, that fourth quarter stretch where the Wolves like went on that run that essentially put the game out of reach. It just looked like Phoenix had given up at a certain point. They're just letting, they like gave Jaden McDaniels just like free run at the basket. And like, those are the kind of things that I've seen the Wolves do in the playoffs, or when they've got the kind of sagging shoulders and been like, ah, oh, what are we going to do? We can't stop this. They're the team doing that right now. And I'm just, maybe the surprise is I'm just not used to seeing it. Even if I watched this team all year,
yeah,
I didn't know if they had another level or a sustained excellence in the playoffs. And
well, that was the thing they had to prove, right?
I mean,
this team was constructed not to be a first round exit, not just to squeak into the playoffs and, you know, put up a good fight. No, this is a team that's built to contend for a championship right now. I mean, that's why Tim Connelly made all these moves and did the, gave up the assets he did to get Gobert and to bring in Mike Conley and Na. The thing about the Suns is I think it's kind of been their MO is like when they get out to a lead and they're kind of front running, they're tough because when they're making shots, but I don't know that clearly their depth, they just don't have the depth.
No, especially if Grayson Allen's out, that's
And
going to
Grayson
hurt
Allen's
them.
out and that looked like a pretty severe ankle sprain, but even with them, they just don't have the depth to withstand. This has been a physical start to the series,
Yes.
and that's clearly in the Wolves' favor because that's how their style is and their size and their depth. So I just think the Suns probably they look demoralized there in the fourth quarter, like they just don't have enough weapons to or at least they didn't in the first two games. We'll see what kind of adjustments they make going home. But man, you talk about a team going there with confidence. I can't imagine the
Yeah.
Wolves have any more than what they have right now.
No, and it's, you had Ant did not have a huge scoring night, obviously, in game two. I thought he was making pretty good decisions. He was distributing, he was getting the ball to McDaniels in good spots, which helped McDaniels have the huge game he did. Cat gets three fouls in the first quarter. Like, can you imagine a Wolves team in the past where those two guys barely do anything in the first half, at least, and you're only down one at halftime because you can play the defense? Because Conley can pick up some of that slack and he scores in the first half, really keeps them in that game. Gobert chips in with some stuff. Like everybody, they do have so much depth, even guys that aren't playing right now. They've got a lot of depth on that team and the ability to carry things in stretches.
Well, that's the thing, and I looked it up in the fourth quarter when they started to make that spurt that really pulled away. I think they were up 17 at the time. Ant had made two field goals. Now he was pretty good at the line. I think he had made seven free throws, but he only made two shots at that point. And Towns was a non-factor in the first half because he had three fouls. And despite those two things, you go going in thinking it's like, wow, they need Ant to be superstar and Towns doesn't have to be great. No, they can win other ways and you looked at game one. To me, that was about Naz Reid and Na. Game two is about Jaden McDaniels. I mean, if he can play at that level, I thought he was really good in the first game. He didn't score like he did in game two, but his defense and just overall impact was there. But game two, if he could play at that level, man, now you're talking about all the other guys that a team has to worry about him and what he's doing, and that's going to free up Ant to give him more driving lane. So it's they were two different type of wins the way they
Yes.
went about it,
But that's good.
which
That's
but
encouraging.
that to me that's the most impressive thing about it,
Yes.
that it wasn't just okay, Ant has to go crazy for this
Right.
team to win. It's like they can win a different way too.
I've been
And I
so.
think and sorry I think it's because everything starts with defense. I
Yes.
mean that's the foundation for what they're, I mean that should take them a long way, just the way they play defense.
And I've been really impressed with Finch's recognition of how important Nickeil Alexander-Walker is in this series and deploying him in a different way. Like sometimes just saying, you're the point guard right now. You are, we need this defensive lineup on the floor. So when Conley's out, and if you're not going to play Morris more than 8 or 10 minutes, you can get by with 10 or 15 minutes of not at the point if the trade-off is that you have those like automatic switches now on Booker, Beal. Like there's no, Conley's not even a bad defensive player, but there's no weak defensive matchup if you've got that kind of size and ability to switch. And then you've still got Gobert out there playing the kind of catch-all center field where he's doing everything. It's a tough lineup to score against.
Well, it is, and you go back to game one, Conley had a really just kind of uncharacteristic game. He didn't shoot it, but he also just the foul trouble and the fouls he committed. Well, you can put Na out there and you're gonna get a great defensive player who you can put on, any of those wing shooters that they have. He can handle the ball. And then last night or, game two, Conley was terrific in the first half. He carried him for a
They
while,
needed him. He had a bunch of
and Nas'
shots.
impact wasn't as great there. But defensively, that's the thing when you have Na and Jaden and Rudy out there, and when Ant wants to, lock up a guy on the ball, his pressure. I mean, you saw he picked up a foul there. I think it was Bradley Beal there in the fourth quarter where he was just all over him and Ant got the foul. But that when he digs in and wants to shut someone down, he it's pretty impressive. So this, it's a team-wide commitment. And And Towns, I mean, game one, they put him on Durant, and Durant scored a lot of points, but he had to work for him. I thought, I think that was more a case of not bad defense, but
Yeah.
just an all-time great shot maker and some
Yes.
hard shots. And so, but it really does start with Rudy. And look at how many shots Phoenix has missed at the rim in
Yes,
this
the
series
hurrying
already.
shots.
They started the second half, they missed three in a row.
Yeah.
And they're rushing shots because one, Rudy, but also I think because McDaniels too and his
Yeah.
shot blocking. And so, yeah, I mean, credit Finch for doing that, but also credit Tim Connelly for getting Na in that
Oh,
deal.
yeah.
I mean, we probably don't talk about that deal enough, when you think of what Mike Conley and Na has brought to this team in terms of just professionalism,
Yeah.
and Na's been just terrific addition for them.
Didn't they get 3 second-round picks in that deal too? Like that's like an all-time fleece.
Yeah, I'd
I
have
know
to get.
second-round picks aren't what they used to be, but they're currency for other trades. Like
Sure.
that was a. I mean, as much as we talked about how lopsided the Gobert trade looked early, and it doesn't. We're not talking about that anymore because he's been excellent
No,
this year.
yeah.
Getting all of that just for D'Lo, that was pretty lopsided in the other
For
direction.
sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know if they can't remember the exact terms, but for one, just getting rid of D'Lo, I think everybody was done with that experiment. I mean, it was just time to move on and to get, Mike Conley's professionalism and Na, who's just been terrific. I didn't really know a whole lot about him or how he was going to fit here, but he's just been
Yeah.
terrific. And you mentioned the Gobert trade, and the Athletic had that anonymous survey with polls with
Yeah.
the anonymous poll with NBA players that came out this week, and Rudy was voted the most overrated player in the NBA. I could not disagree more.
No.
How you could watch him and call him overrated when you look at the impact he makes on the entire defense, and the things he does with his screening and rolling, and there's probably more at play there than I don't know how many, as I listened to the broadcast last night, and Jim Pete said it wasn't all the players. Obviously, it was just a small percentage of players that
Yeah.
took part in the thing. So, to call him overrated is just, I think clearly
Yeah.
misguided.
I think people just don't like him. I mean,
Yeah,
that's,
that personality. That's what I'm saying. It's
personality
probably
is what it is.
yeah,
And,
which is I think I find him being around him. I find him very interesting, kind of
Yeah,
his
he's
introspection.
absolutely.
Yeah,
He's an interesting person.
his interviews are very. I kind of find him interesting.
So now they've passed these first two tests in huge ways. Now it goes to Phoenix, and the cliche is series doesn't start until a road game or road team wins a game. Phoenix
Yep.
could win these two games, and all of a sudden we're kind of right back in the same mode. But it feels like the Wolves right now are the better team. That wasn't the narrative going in. It was how are they ever going to beat these guys? And now they've done it twice, two different ways, like you said, in by the end relatively comfortable fashion. And you're like, okay, I don't feel bad about their chances of at least a split in Phoenix at all.
Yeah, no, and I think the way the games have unfolded, it's just they've clearly been the best team, the better
Yeah,
team.
I agree.
And so
I
it's
agree.
not like it was a close game and they won on a buzzer beater
No.
and Phoenix
It
was
didn't
right
feel
there with
fluky.
them.
It
And
didn't feel fluky at all. It didn't feel like they shot
no.
the lights out or just something was unsustainable.
No, I mean, Ant got hot, but we see that all the
Yeah.
time. They're the better team. I mean,
Yeah,
it's
they are.
their ceiling is a lot higher than what Phoenix's is for all those reasons we mentioned earlier on. So now you have to take it on the road. But I think it's kind of a cliche, but defense travels on the road.
Yeah.
And I think they'll gain so much confidence because that was the narrative last year. Is like this team has to prove it in the playoffs. And they
Yeah.
were the last two playoff series, last 2 years ended with Chris Finch talking about his team's maturity.
Yeah.
Well, or lack of maturity. I think we saw a mature team the first two games,
For
and you
sure.
can't tell me that that's not
No,
gonna
for
that they
sure.
haven't been thinking about, okay, we have to show that we're a good team in the postseason and to play that way. It's only 2 wins, but to be dominant that way in different fashions and different guys stepping up, I think that playing at a C with the Suns probably that hey, there's a lot of things that they have to figure out and worry about because now Jaden McDaniels can beat
Yeah.
you. And now, their bench has had a huge game. So, and Anthony Edwards has gone off, but Towns really hasn't. He had a spurt there in the third
He
quarter,
did.
where
Yeah,
it's,
he had like eight in a row. Yeah.
Yeah, but he hasn't had, you know, a huge town games where you feel like that's coming at some point.
Right.
And so I feel confident with this team going on the road that they'll be able to at least get one win there.
Royal Credit Union smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Shift to the draft, NFL draft, Thursday night. We should finally end
the moment of truth.
Speculation season. What I've asked probably a few different people this on the show over the last couple of weeks. What do you feel like is the most likely outcome Thursday night?
I think they are going to really put an aggressive package together to try to go get Drake May at 3.
Okay.
I can't predict what New England's thinking. They have so many questions with their holes with their personnel. They may look at this as a, you know, this is going to be a longer term rebuild that is beyond just the quarterback this year.
Yeah.
So they may be willing to do it. If that doesn't happen, I think the package will be less aggressive and they'll try to get JJ McCarthy.
Yeah. I think they should be able to get one of those. It feels like McCarthy is more likely at this point. It just feels like you're going to be hard pressed to talk New England out of Drake May when they need a quarterback. Like, I know you want to put him in a good situation. You don't want him coming into a bad roster where you've got a lot of holes. But if this is, you know, if people have been saying this is the quarterback class for a long time, you don't know when you're going to be in a position to draft a quarterback again. I have a hard time thinking they're going to give that up. So it's just easier to think about Arizona Chargers, one of those teams that doesn't need a quarterback right now. And it's probably going to be McCarthy, unless for some reason New England likes McCarthy more than May, and then May is available down at 4 or 5. I don't know.
Sure.
But it feels like McCarthy at 5. I think that's what Mark Craig's mock draft was. That feels like the most likely place to make a trade.
Yeah, Chargers, yeah, because I agree. If it's as many holes and depleted as the Patriots roster is, it's the most important position.
Yeah, it just is.
And so if you're in love with the guy, you can figure out the rest of the roster in different ways. You can't always figure out the quarterback. And so, but I think you still have to be aggressive and try to get there. You know, Cardinals, you know, what are they going to do? You know, what are they going to be looking for? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be similar package to what the Patriots would want? And so, you know, the Chargers make sense at 5. But I think, and I've been saying this, and Kwesi alluded to it at his last press conference. He's like, you don't want to wake up with regret that you didn't do something, that, you know, you weren't aggressive enough. And so this is the time to play offense. You know, this is not, because you don't know what, you have to go in assuming that Denver is going to be aggressive. The Raiders are going to be aggressive. The Giants are probably going to be aggressive trying to move up. And so I don't think you can anticipate, like, if we can just wait and not have to give up as many assets to get our guy, you could wind up sitting it out. And that would be the worst case scenario.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to get your guy. But at the same time, what's your, on Drake May, what is your Kwesi Adofo-Mensah walk away price? He likes to use that term.
Yeah,
what's
the
your
walk away? I don't know. I mean, okay, you're clearly going to give up the 2 this year, the 1 next year.
Yeah, that's where I draw the line. That's where I stop.
Yeah, I
that's
wouldn't do me. Another one. Now, would they want a later round pick in year 26? I would do that because
just a little sweetener, like a 4th or a 5th in that year. Okay, that'd be okay with me.
If that doesn't, because I go back to the quote that Brandon Bean, I think is his name, the Bills GM, was asked about, you know, the quarterbacks and stuff at the combine this year. And he said, yeah, you know, we took a lot of criticism for how much we gave up for Josh Allen. And the way he looked at it was, if I'm wrong, I'm not going to be here anyways.
Yeah.
And if I'm right, nobody's going to care what I gave up.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, if you hit right and you give up a lot, we're not going to be talking about how much you gave up. But if you're wrong, you're going to get fired anyways. You know, it's like, I hate to be callous about it, but
it's true.
You know, it's you know. So that's probably what's going to happen. And so I would rather go down swinging, man. And this is the thing, but you have to be absolutely sold and loved and for sure. It doesn't mean you're going to be right.
Can't talk yourself into it. You got to be sure.
You have to be sure. You can't be on the fence. You can't be like, well, we think he's good, but we can coach him. No,
right.
You have to be 100% sure that this is the franchise guy and we're willing to make this commitment in terms of the assets we're going to give up. And then if it doesn't work out, you at least felt comfortable in that, hey,
right.
Because odds are, what's history tell us? It's probably flipping the coin whether the guy is going to be, you know, the guy or not. So,
yeah. Really quick, Gopher football team has added some big name, big school guys lately. LSU, Georgia, Clemson. Everybody hates the transfer portal when it's going the other way, Chip. But when guys are coming in, people don't seem to mind, do they?
Yeah, that's it swings. I always say it swings both ways.
It does swing both ways. Swings up, swings down, lake effect.
I said, looking at their depth chart, they absolutely had to hit the portal for a wide receiver.
Yeah.
I don't think they have enough there. And so they got a freshman retro fresher transfer from Georgia, the wide receiver. I can't sit here and tell you, you know, much about him other than what
he was a four-star recruit. I mean,
four-star. Yeah, that. I mean, recruiting rankings liked him. Georgia liked him enough to sign him, so that tells you that he's talented. So maybe he's just looking for an opportunity more than what you know he's going to get there. And then they also they got a transfer from the quarterback transfer for Virginia Tech on Tuesday night. I assume you know he's coming in to be the backup.
Yeah.
PJ's always said that Brosmer, Max Brosmer, the kid from New Hampshire, the transfer is going to be the starter. And so, but this gives them depth. It gives them veteran depth. You're not having to play the true freshman as your backup.
Right.
The only other, they have the true freshman and Max Shikajanski, the walk-off from last year. They needed, they absolutely had to have a veteran backup quarterback. So they're filling needs and they're getting guys that, you know, either from Power Five. There's no such thing as Power Five. I keep saying Power Five, but, you know, big conference schools.
Yeah.
And guys that, you know, were four stars or whatever.
Yeah,
Jackson Howard coming back from LSU. And so it's been a good month. I mean, we've been so focused on everything else, you know, the Wolves and the Twins and the draft. But this has been a very good month in recruiting for PJ Fleck.
Absolutely has. Chip, appreciate your time. As always, we'll see how the draft unfolds, see how game three unfolds later this week. I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
All right, brother. We'll see you, man.
Great stuff from Chip. He wrote in today's paper and on StarTribune.com about the draft saying, hey, they got to get it right. It doesn't matter what they give up for this quarterback. It's not going to matter in the end. What matters is getting your guy. I agree to a point. I still think Kwesi Adofo-Mensah's got to have a walk-away price where he's like, you know what? We like this guy at this price. We like that guy at this price. We're not going to let you hijack our future by saying, you know, you can't have this guy unless you give us four first round picks, things like that for Drake May, number three. Wouldn't do that. That's too much. That's taking advantage of the situation. You can't get taken advantage of. You have to find a fair middle-ish ground, understanding that quarterback is a premium, understanding that there's some built-in stuff there where you're going to have to overpay a little bit. Ben Gessling's final mock draft for the Star Tribune did all the Vikings picks, rounds 1 through 7, has the Vikings sending 3 first-round picks and a third-round pick to move up for Drake May. That still feels like a lot, guys. I don't know. They got to be sure. I know you're never going to know for sure. I know that at the end of the day, if the difference of getting Drake May, who you really believe in, as they surely do, and not is a third-round pick, I guess you have to do it. But, man, that is a lot to give up. They have boxed themselves into a corner with needing a quarterback and basically signaling that they are going to take a quarterback and signaling they love Drake May. So I'll be curious to see exactly what kind of deal they can get, how far they can move up, who they wind up with. And, again, we're going to find out together tonight, and it's going to be fascinating to see. Chip and I also talked plenty of Wolves, as you heard. Naz Reid, 6th man of the year, very close voting. Malik Monk from the Kings was the other top candidate there. Naz edged him out by like 10 points in the voting. It was like 352 to 342. Absolutely deserving. He would be a starter on probably 15 or 20 teams in the league at least. You know, started some games this year when Carl Anthony Towns was out with injury, gives the Wolves tremendous luxury, tremendous depth at that position, gives them such, you know, possibilities off the bench. He, Nickeil Alexander-Walker for a lot of this year, Kyle Anderson as well, plenty of bench players who have been huge for the Wolves along the way. bench is shortened up a little bit in the playoffs, but they're certainly going to need Naz Reid. And Naz Reid is certainly a fan favorite. Unbelievable. You remember Chris Hines' story from last week? I've got a letter, an email this morning from emailer Andrew says, "Hi, Michael. I am humbly writing to bring attention to an effort to change the name of North 6th Street, which runs along the northeast side of Target Center, to Naz Reid Street. While I appreciate we can't go and dedicate precious downtown infrastructure willy-nilly, memorializing the two blocks of North 6th Street between Hennepin Avenue and 2nd Avenue North is an appropriate homage to the franchise's first ever Sixth Man of the Year. I have started a change.org petition because I am a humble citizen who hasn't had the time to navigate the proper political channels to effect change. Also, Naz is a man of the people, and a grassroots movement is more befitting of the relationship we have with the ever humble star." So that's, there you go right there. They're trying to change the name of a street for a guy who's not even a starter. That's how much fans of the Timberwolves love Naz Reid, how much he has meant to this team, what his impact is. People just walking around saying, "Naz Reid." That's all you need to know. Naz Reid. People love him. They want to change the name of the street. Sixth man of the year. Absolutely deserving. And we'll see what he has in store Friday night when these playoffs resume. Let us finish with the cooler Twins. Like I said, third win in a row. Watched a decent amount of that game last night, especially the early part. Willie Castro with the big three-run home run on his birthday. Joe Ryan, an effective outing. He's getting tons of strikeouts early, gave up a couple home runs, but did enough to win the game. Twins win 6-3. And again, I don't know if this is a function of Twins playing a little bit better or the White Sox just being this bad. 3-21 now. They are terrible. Tied for the second worst start through 24 games in Major League Baseball history. They do not have much of a chance right now. So Twins with a chance for a four-game sweep this afternoon at Target Field before things change up. They go to, I think they go play the Angels out in Los Angeles after this. Bobby Nightingale Jr. will join me on Friday's show, Twins beat writer, to talk about this team, talk about the tough start, talk about what, if anything, we learned from this series against the White Sox, talk about injury comeback possibilities. Saw that Carlos Correa and Joan Duran could possibly rejoin the team during this road trip, which would be huge for them. Still working to get Royce Lewis back, but they already got Max Kepler back. If they can get both those guys back on this road trip, or at least sooner rather than later, that would start to make you feel better about this team's fortunes as well. So Bobby and I will talk about that on Friday's show. I'm sure we'll have tons of draft talk on Friday's show, as well as getting you ready for the Wolves playoff game on Friday's show as well. Until then, I am Michael Rand. Have a great rest of your Thursday. Back at it again tomorrow.